Greetings, salutations, and positive vibrations, and welcome back after such a long time to the world-class football podcast called Off the Post. I am your host, football journalist Nick Maitland, and I know that you would have missed me for a little bit. I went on a little vacation, a little sabbatical, just to get the mind right and get the body rested. So now I'm rested and ready to go. So thank you for joining me on this return episode of Off the Post. Of course, we have some local news for you. And the first thing is that Barbados, the under-17 girls, they unfortunately bowed out of the CONCACAF under-17 women's qualifiers after they suffered a second successive defeat of the competition. Now, the competition was playing at the IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida, and the young lady Tridents went down 2-0 to the eventual Group B winners Curacao, and they also lost to Belize 2-1 in their first game. Against Belize, they scored the opener in that game, but Belize came back with 2 late goals and claimed that match. So we're still proud of our under-17 girls going out there and doing us very well. And it's just, you know, the lack of football, the lack of training that would have preceded their entry into this tournament. But nevertheless, they did of their best. Congratulations to Coach Juggy Ford and all his assistants. And thank you as well, and a major thank you to Emerson Boyce, who facilitated a lot of these trainings. And you know Emerson Boyce, former Wigan Athletic captain, FA Cup winning captain, and former Barbados Tridents captain as well. He facilitated a lot of the training through his Emerson Boyce Foundation. So we have to give kudos to all those persons who aided in the preparation of our girls heading off to Florida. And this is not the end. Definitely, there's some names that I want you to be familiar with. Raina Cummings, she's the captain. Jessie Robinson, I've watched Jessie from under 14 coming all the way up, and she's doing incredibly well. All these girls are going to make up the senior women's team in just 2 winks of an eye. So keep an eye on these girls, and congratulations again to our ladies. Now, our under 20 boys, they will get a chance to stretch their legs and be in some competition as well. They will be headed off to Dominican Republic next month for the CONCACAF Men's Under 20 Championship, which will qualify teams to the 2023 FIFA Under 20 Men's World Cup and the 2024 Summer Olympic Games. Remember, the Olympic Games deals with under 23 players. And since we're going to have Olympic Games again in another 3 years, I think this, to have the under 20s, is a very good decision from FIFA and CONCACAF. So that is what they announced. They announced that the region's men's representatives at the 2024 Summer Olympics will qualify through the 2022 CONCACAF Men's Under 20 Championship. The 19 men's under 20 teams participated in the qualifiers, all ranked 17 and below based on the current CONCACAF Men's Under 20 ranking, have been divided into 3 groups of 5 and 1 group of 4. In Group A, Curacao, Grenada, Dominica, St. Martin, the Dutch one, and British Virgin Islands. Then in Group B, Dominican Republic, St. Lucia, Belize, St. Martin, the French one, and Anguilla. Group C, this is the big group here, Bermuda, Puerto Rico, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, Montserrat, and Barbados. Group D, Nicaragua, Cayman Islands, Guyana, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. The qualifiers are scheduled to take place from November 5th to 14th in Santo Domingo, and you can check CONCACAF website for the official schedule. I don't have the match schedule as yet, but we will share that with you in due course because we want you to support our young Tridents, the under 20 boys, and especially their head coach, good friend, Coach Fitzgerald Carter. He's so driven, so focused. He knows exactly what he wants from his teams. He knows exactly the standard that he wants to coach towards, and he's definitely on his way to that. And I'm sure that all of his players have understood and know the intensity of this coach. So big up yourself, Fitzy, and we will see you soon, and hopefully the guys can give of their best. Fitzgerald is also a Combermerian. He attended the Combermere School, and so did I. And currently, as we speak, it is Combermere Week. So I can just pause to let everybody stoops, and You know, I'll continue talking and then I will continue. Okay, now that that's over, speaking of Combermere, I have I spoke to a good friend of mine a little while ago before I went on vacation, so that when you hear our conversation, you will understand the time frame in which it was done. But I spoke to a good friend, Coach Marlon Hart. He's someone who's intimately involved with the junior teams of our island, the under 15 team specifically. And he's also a coach at the school level and at the club level. He's doing it all. And he's someone who I really look up to when it comes to junior football in Barbados. But for now, that is it from me for my opening remarks here on the Off the Post podcast, the World Class Football Podcast. And when we return, we will have a one-on-one with Coach Marlon Hart.
You can contact your Nation Publishing subscription team 7 days a week in 7 different ways. Call customer service any day at 430-5550. Call subscriptions at 430-5503 or 04. Email subscribers at nationnews.com. Email e-paper support at nationnews.com. Visit www.nationnews.com and select print subscriptions. Visit www.nationnews.com and select e-paper subscriptions. Visit our office on Fontebelle St. Michael. If your call is not answered, please leave a message. We are here to serve you. Nation News, your news, your time, your way.
So I'm here with Marlon Hart. He's a coach, he's a teacher. He's a football administrator. He's one of the big dogs in Barbados football, I would say. He's done a lot and continues to do a lot. Welcome, Hart. How you doing, man? What's the latest with you and coaching on the international front, on the national front, I should say?
Nationally, I still remain with the under-7 teams. Boys are going up to under-20. There's no tournament for us this year, so we haven't been out to train as yet, but I'm looking forward to getting out there whenever the opportunity arises. But yeah, it's not, other than that, it's been the shutdown. I've put a pause on things. Disappointing me, but you know, it is what it is.
That seems to be the prevailing mood for 2021, not just in football, but in life in general. It is what it is. And here on the Off the Post podcast, we are just trying to, you know, lift the spirits a bit, but truly it has been what it has been. And in terms of football, the lack of football has maybe affected the development of some of our junior players, but as you would have noted, as we have discussed as well, there are a lot of guys who are off to university and doing pretty well, and guys who you would have coached, Andre Appaway, Devontae Richards, Taggio James, and so many others. Tell me about those guys and the role you would have played in getting them to be attending college in the, well, overseas.
Yeah, man, I've been blessed to coach some amazing young talent. I would have came in contact with those boys through our Commonwealth School, so I met most of them at the age of 11. So I think Andre kind of stands up because initially when I met him, he was telling me he wanted to be a goalkeeper. And so we had a conversation about it, and I realized, you know, he had a left foot, which is something as a coach you got to take note of, considering the number of left-footed players that, you know, you come across. I think the process of development is about 60% coaching and knowledge, and then it's 40% willingness of the players to want to improve, to be motivated, to be consistent with training and these things, right? So I don't think I can say that, you know, I can take complete responsibility for the player and fully develop, because that's not necessarily the case. I think I recognize when they needed to be challenged and, you know, put them in situations to be challenged and to improve. The timing of some of the challenges was important for them too. And they said that as it relates to, you know, having the opportunities to be then under 15. You know, that team is really a flagship team for youth development in Barbados. I hope that it can really become, over the next 10 years, a true model for what it takes for players in Barbados to develop. You know, to be amongst your peers that are really playing at that high level. like be competing against each other consistently, because they think that's a big part of development, just being in the program here. You know, they say that steel sharpens steel or iron sharpens iron, right? Yep. It's that type of environment that needs to be reciprocated, you know, year by year to make sure that they get the best into the players. I get more excited about meeting a player at a particular age or a particular level and working with them and trying to get the best out of them. I think that's one part of coaching that I enjoy the most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the experiences with the national team that I had, I think are very important, you know, for my development. So for me to see what's out there and how other countries do it, so I think that's important as well.
Take me back to the beginning then of your days at Combermere. Great school, by the way. And no slight to your beloved Lodge School. I know you were celebrating Lodge Week recently. So, you know, hats off to Lodge School. I was telling a friend of mine that I am quite fond of some ladies who attended Lodge School. And I have some good friends, you know, yourself included, and my good friend Ramel Martin, good guys who attended Lodge School and did a lot for the school. So I rate Lodge, you know, but you know, I would never rate anybody higher than Combermere. But yes, fast forward, you got your start in coaching at Combermere School under Michael Small, my first and only football coach, I like to say. I don't know if he would like to take credit for my football playing career, but he's my first and only coach, successful at Combermere, the Alex Ferguson of Combermere School, and you would have got your start under him and been exposed to, as you said, a lot of these great players. So tell me about that journey from starting at Combermere and then the work that you would have done on the local club scene and then on the national scene.
You know, whenever the opportunity presents itself, I like to give a lot of credit to Mike Small, because, you know, he was somebody that was willing to be patient and mentor. Like, I spent a lot of my lunch times with him. You know, just going over scenarios, like, you know, coach, we was in a situation. You know what I mean? He was always, you know, Small guy, he one-liners. He would always give you one of those pointers that kind of always stick with you.
And the greatest team talks as well.
Yes. You know what I mean? I pretty much walked into an environment at Commonwealth that was already established. You know, everybody knew Mr. Small was the taskmaster, that he wasn't going to stand for any nonsense. And I think that I had his support with players in my initial days, in my rookie coaching stints, that, you know, nobody didn't try to pull one over on me because, you know, that I had the full backing of Mr. Small. I thank him a lot because, you know, he took time out. He would come and watch my sessions and say, well, maybe you need to do this. Maybe you need to add this to your sessions, like watch over. And then when we go to games, so, as a coach, he was asked, you know, why you chose to do this, why you chose to do that. He would always give positive feedback, always encouraging. You know what I mean? And I know when I talk to other coaches, that's not the experience that they get. So I know them unique and blessed with that opportunity to have somebody with so much knowledge and wisdom, mm-hmm. who's also willing to share, you know? So I appreciated that. I don't think I ever had opportunities to get bad habits in my coaching.
Right,
and I think that's very, very important. Right, so I understood process, you know, and that's important as a coach. I understood there's no shortcuts to success. You always have to work hard, always have to be prepared, and these were things that were instilled in me under the guidance of Mr. Small. Coaching at Combermere built the platform to go on and be more confident and try new things. So from Combermere when I started, this 2012 or so, I built confidence and I wanted to try myself in the club setting. So I went over to Mavericks. Mavericks was another opportunity to just do as much coaching as possible. Because at Combermere, we coach 4 or 5 days a week, and then we coach at Kickstart for another day, 6 days a week. I've been coaching and I've been doing for a number of years. I think my first 3 or 4 years, I spent 6 days just constantly coaching and learning. And then I would see that results would come. Along that time, there were opportunities with coaching courses. So I'm saying I was blessed to get some success there as well. We had one season with Mavericks where we went undefeated to win the under 15 championship. That was against a team from Pro Shutters,
mm-hmm.
who had the likes of Abai and Thierry Gill and the same Nathan Keith. That was me at Combermere. Shaquan Phillips. They had about 8 or 9 players that were representing the same under 15 team. And I ended up coaching with Peewee. You know, that team had about 7 or 8 of those players. And it kind of showed me from there, you know, if I could build a unit, if I could emphasize teamwork and work together, then when we play against other oppositions, then, you know, we can at least hold our own. After that season with Mavericks, we went undefeated. I was invited to be the assistant to Peewee. And, you know, that was another experience because, you know, at that time I had some talented players, but I was never able to work with a team that had, you know, 25 players that could play and compete at a high level, right? So just being in that environment, it was a little daunting at first. It felt like, yo, am I ready for this experience? But over time, started getting more comfortable, your confidence started to build. To see those boys grow and experience and learn things from groups as well was important. And then I was fortunate to get my own squad now and become head coach of a national program with the under-14s who traveled to the, I think that was 2018, CFU under-14 championships. That was the first national team trip they had. And that was in itself was another eye-opener. See how teams like Jamaica, for example, did it, how they went about coaching the game and see how their coaches handle the situation. And, you know, see how well they were prepared, those experiences for me always remind me that, you know, we can't take anything for granted here. Not to oppose again, we are inferior to those teams. To just get eyes on the opposition and see what they're doing so that we can know how to prepare. And as small as we are as a country, I think that there are a lot of benefits for being small as well. Because I think of countries in the region, like your Canada, your boys have to travel miles and miles just to get training sessions where they can't play. For some things, 4 or 5 months in a year because of the weather, we have opportunity to train year-round. You know what I mean? So we're going to maximize on the areas that we, you know, naturally benefit from. And not necessarily use the excuse that they got more money or they got more talent or whatever, but just work what we have to. And that's why I always believe in the talent that Barbados has. I accept the shortcomings, but I know that we have the potential to the challenge and our ranking in youth football of 14th out to the 52 shows that we can compete up to under 17 level, right? Okay. It's just what we do after that level. So that's why I'm very much pleased that, you know, their end results, that these boys were able to come through programs and now, you know, at 18 and 19 are able to be at college and represent the country at that higher level where we're not able to necessarily give them the environment for us. So I'm very pleased with that. And that kind of sums up my entire experience. So as these boys have developed as players, I feel like I've developed as well as a coach. I saw the boys the other day where I look at it and now I have like 4 or 5 years experience at coaching at youth national level, which is pretty amazing. Because that time felt like it really, really did fly.
Sounds like a great journey so far.
Yeah.
And I like the next chapter that you have embarked on, Heart High Performance. And this is now your own personal soccer school where you would take on small groups and one-on-one training and, you know, try to improve on those finer points, not just for your players or players that you'll be associated with, but for anybody from youth to masters, anybody who wants to fine-tune some finer points of their game, they can come to you. And that's a really great way of, you know, maximizing and, you know, monetizing your footballing experience. Yeah. So tell me about how that started and how that's going.
I think it's an important program, not just for myself, but for the benefit of the country, right? Because it will support and facilitate boys know that come back from university. Because, you know, these coaches, overseas, they send back their training programs that they want enforced, you know, and they can support them with that. Trying to build more relationships with college coaches overseas, you know, to see what their demands are. I have some young men now, 20, 21, that still want to train at a high level, still want to compete at a high level, even though that they're working or whatever. And I give them that avenue so that, you know, whenever the Premier League season starts back, then, you know, that they can feel more confident about their game going into to challenge for a playing Premier League team. The easiest way to refer to it is like your football lesson. You know what I mean? Keeping you sharp, keeping you prepared for bigger challenges. I didn't want going into the realm of creating another club. I thought the best way for me to go about it is to give you these sessions there. So you as a player individually can improve. And I, having these small groups allows you to challenge yourself with somebody. You know what I mean? To see how fast you are compared to somebody else, to keep the sessions upbeat and not play anything.
So I could come?
Yes, you could come.
I ain't scrimmaging so long, you know, COVID, etc. And I was just there putting myself in the footballer's shoes, like, to be able to still be able to train by yourself and still getting that rigorous workout football-wise is very, very important, especially in these times with COVID. Because even though we realize we can train over Zoom, we can train together over Zoom. And so we are thankful for operations like Zoom who give us the platform to facilitate online training sessions. But persons like yourself, creating platforms like this can really help a lot of these footballers who have been stagnant, I'm sure, in between the break where the national team wasn't able to train. When they came back from Florida and when the national team wasn't able to train, now they're able to train again. A lot of those guys didn't do much training. I'm not sure, I can't speak for them, but there's a possibility that they didn't train that much. And to have the platform to go and train in a small group in times like this where training is very difficult is quite an asset. And I wish you all the best with the establishment and also the development of Hearts High Performance, HHP, I don't know if you call it that, but Hearts High Performance. Serving the community. And before you go, I just want to speak about your affiliation. We spoke of one of your affiliations, which is Lodge School and, you know, the Griffins. But what about the Gunners now? I know you're a massive Arsenal fan.
Massive.
Arsenal didn't start the season particularly well. You won the North London Derby. I enjoyed seeing the goals. I commented on last week's podcast that I enjoyed seeing the goals. It was a brilliant performance. I loved the knee slide by Aubameyang, which looked like Henry's knee slide, where he ran 50 yards against Spurs, I think it was. It was brilliant. I love it. It really gave me that nostalgic feeling that I love, that romantic feeling of football. It was a great derby. Thierry Henry was in the stands. You know, brilliant derby for all Arsenal fans. So tell me about what you think about this season and your expectations.
I've been an Arsenal fan from, let me tell you, man, my father had an Ian Wright jersey back in the 90s that I used to wear when I had practice at school. You know what I mean? Like, that's an Arsenal fan from, like, Batland, right? I've been a Wenger fan. I love Arsenal Wenger. I love his story. I love that he was an electrical engineer with a master in economics. Like, you know what I mean? And I felt like somebody that saw the academic route that, you know, that has some comparisons, you know? it was important for us to be patient with Arteta. I mean, there was the FA Cup. Don't forget, like, how difficult it was to come in under the situation. Came in December, he had the FA Cup wrapped up. In 6 months, you know what I mean? Beating the likes of Man City and Chelsea. I guess people really hope that this meant that we're gonna be back to the glory and, you know, Champions League and all as well. But he needed to struggle. When he watched every press conference, he talked about suffering. And he, as a coach, had to suffer and realize how challenging the Premier League was in that first year. And I've always, told people to be patient and people to acknowledge how difficult it is to coach in the Premier League, right? The Premier League, without question, one of the most challenging leagues to play in because the amount of styles of play, the amount of scenarios that present themselves. Certainly that December series of games really proves itself to be one of the most difficult periods within any other competition in the world, right? So I was always willing to be patient. So after the after the COVID and stuff, I didn't necessarily think it was fair to him to just say we want him. He's learning on the job. I need to remind myself of that sometimes too. To get rid of him now is to set the club back another 18 months. I didn't want them fans that in it, so when we don't get anything in Real Madrid, they're going to always be Arsenal fans, right? So I ain't little man teasing me and telling me how much young Arsenal is, right? So just smiling. they can be patient, right, man? It's one of them things, man. Even at the start of the season, I say realistically, if we can finish above like the last and these teams, if we get 6th, I think that's a reasonable platform for us to again make a few more signings. Because I don't think these youngsters that we have now. I heard a comment over the fact that we're the youngest team in the league. I think we're about 3 or 4 signings away from getting it right. You know, we ain't gonna lose Lacazette or Aubameyang along the way. I expect they go their route, but I in it for the long haul, man. I think we could see where the team wants to go. I think we know about established back four that makes us more competitive, right there. I think we're going to beat the likes of Liverpool and Man City, but we're definitely more competitive. We definitely know a little more scrappy, a little more combative. On the back four, and it's got good signs all around. It just needs some time, and I need to get home, man.
You sound very confident. Well, your name is Hart, and you certainly have a heart for this Arsenal team. So I hope that they actually repay your faith this season. My comment on the FA Cup would be that Aubameyang was just in form and took you to the FA Cup final and took you over the line. But I don't want to get into that argument because that is in the past. The truth of the matter is what you just said. I think Arteta needs some time. And I always point to Klopp and Guardiola. The reason why those two guys are successful is that they get every player that they want. If you look at Rodgers' side, you just made that comparison between Brendan Rodgers' side and Klopp's side. Only one player remains, which is Jordan Henderson, and he's wearing the captain's armband. Because every player that Klopp wanted, the board went out and got. Every player that Guardiola wanted, the board went out and got. And it seems now for Arteta, the board is starting to warm up to his transfer request. Seems for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at Manchester United, the same thing. So these managers need time with players that they want, and they will probably get the job done because we've seen it with Klopp and Guardiola. But Klopp and Guardiola cannot really be compared to the Norwegian and the Spaniard. You're doing good stuff in football. You're doing good work among the youth as well. And thank you for your dedication to the younger footballers. And of course, every time we big up Michael Small, big coach on campus there over at Combermere School. He went to Combermere as well.
Yeah,
top coach.
Combermere has a special place in my heart.
Of course. Most people have Combermere. It's either they love us too much or they just love us. There's no real in between there. Marla Hart, thank you very much for being on Off the Post, the World Class Football Podcast. And as usual, take care, everybody, and thanks for listening.